Stop me if you've heard this one before, all right? An Englishman, a Scotsman, and an Irishman walk into a bar, and then they all had to leave because the Englishman wanted to go. Pretty good, huh? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Rizdahl. It is Monday, the 27th of June. Great to have you here, everybody. First of all, thanks to Twitter for the opening joke. If you're the one who came up with it, let me know. I'll give credit where credit is due, of course. Second of all, it is becoming increasingly clear here that what we have is a failure to communicate. This is David Cameron, the Prime Minister of the United Kingdom of Great Britain and Northern Ireland, speaking in the House of Commons this very morning.
Mr. Speaker, we can reassure European citizens living here and Brits living in European countries that there'll be no immediate changes in their circumstances. Neither will there be any initial change in the way our people can travel, in the way our goods can move, or the way our services can be sold.
No immediate or initial changes being the operative phrases there. Here's why I bring all of that up. Maybe you could hashtag it as regret over the Brexit, because at just about the same time as the Prime Minister was speaking, we went out on the streets in London and New York and asked people what they thought a leave vote meant.
Even when I voted, I still thought that we would remain in the EU.
I went to bed Thursday night thinking I'm going to get up and still be in Europe Friday morning. I was shocked, stunned, and then scared.
I'm shocked that we actually had voted to leave. I didn't think that was going to happen. My vote, I didn't think was going to matter too much.
I'm trying to think of a nice way to say this. I think, in a way, it's the end of the British Empire.
A disaster.
It should be said here that 2 days of market indigestion do not a disaster make. So let's say that outright. We are a long way from the end of the world. That said, the global economic buzzword for the foreseeable future is clearly uncertainty. Exhibits A and B today are the ratings agencies S&P and Fitch downgrading the UK's debt today off of its AAA top-notch rating. The British currency, the pound sterling, fell to a fresh 31-year low against the dollar. What one is seeing here as a result is what is called in the trade a flight to quality, people seeking a safe haven for their money. Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson explains.
Let's start with a very small currency transaction. The guy in front of me at the bank today was buying pounds. He told the teller he wasn't traveling to the UK until August, but he wanted to get them now, quote, before the price stabilizes.
Well, he's got a 10% discount versus last week, so that's pretty good.
Kathy Jones is the fixed income strategist for Charles Schwab and Company. She says, yeah, right now, the pound is a good deal for American travelers. But investors want a safer place to put their money.
They've been buying treasury bonds and gold. Those have been the two places that have attracted the most in the way of capital.
Both are considered safe investments. Carl Tannenbaum, chief economist at the Northern Trust Company, says investors have also turned to the Japanese yen and the U.S. dollar.
We've seen a spreading risk aversion across investment classes in the trading days since the Brexit vote was released.
Demand for the yen and the dollar have increased their value. That's not good news for exporters in the U.S. and Japan, whose stuff gets more expensive compared to their global competitors. But Jim Paulson, chief investment strategist at Wells Capital Management, cautions against reading too much into these movements. He thinks a lot of people are actually taking a wait-and-see approach, not shifting investments.
And when everyone stops, guess what? Then a few people still playing have outsized impact. So you can have big market moves with very few playing.
And he says when the surprise of the vote wears off, investors will realize that any real changes from Brexit are likely still years away. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
You could make a case, at least based on today and Friday, that the market's buzzword of late ought to be volatility. That word, though, means very different things to Wall Street traders running complex investments and to average Americans managing their own retirement portfolios. Marketplace's Mark Garrison has both perspectives.
Stock dips like we've seen Friday and today sometimes reverse when investors on the sidelines see good deals and start buying. Not in these volatile markets just yet, says Brian Jacobson, chief portfolio strategist at Wells Fargo Funds Management.
If it doesn't look like there are many people who are stepping in.
When markets are sloshing around like this, some people step back to see if things get worse. The uncertainty about when and how Britain will actually leave the EU is giving investors pause.
We don't know exactly when that formal process is going to begin, and also who will be the players at the table negotiating.
Big swings in the market could be a reality until those questions get settled. Francisco Turralba with Morningstar Investment Management doesn't see this volatility fading soon.
I don't think that a clearer path is going to be shown in the next day or two. This is a very complicated process.
When Wall Street says volatility could be here for a while, regular folks thinking about their retirement and college savings can wonder what moves they should make, if any. Financial planner Craig Larson sent out an alert after the Brexit results came in, urging people not to do anything rash.
Our message to our clients was essentially, hang on, we might have some volatile times, but we're in it for the long haul.
And selling stocks in your retirement portfolio because of what happens today, tomorrow, or next week could cost a lot of money down the road. A good long-term retirement plan last week can still work after the Brexit vote. In New York, I'm Mark Garrison for Marketplace.
Just cause fair is fair. We had British voices up top. Here's what some people in Washington, D.C. and New York had to say today about the Brexit.
It just seems like it's just going to be a big mess. And I know it's already sent a lot of my 401k down, and I'm hoping that it comes back quickly, but who knows?
My perception of the UK specifically has changed.
I think that in theory, the concept of the EU is a very good one.
I think people didn't know what they were voting for. I'm a little frightened now, but I think everyone should stay calm.
Stay calm. Good advice. The aforementioned volatility was all to the downside. Today we'll have the details when we do the numbers. The question on the ballot Thursday night in the UK was basic enough. Two simple words, leave or remain. I know that lady said a couple of minutes ago to stay calm, and we should, but the truth is that with that Brexit vote, whenever it goes into effect, right now the UK is in the early stages of what looks to be an economic and political crisis. From London, Marketplace's Stephen Beard has that one.
For 3 days, Britain's finance chief, George Osborne, didn't show his face in public. Then this morning, he finally emerged, blinking in the early Brexit dawn, to offer investors this reassurance.
We start from a position of hard-won strength. And whatever the undoubted challenges, my colleagues and I are determined to do the best for Britain.
Financial markets continued tanking. Osborne's predecessor wasn't surprised. Former finance chief Alistair Darling, who'd steered Britain calmly through the banking crisis, said now he was really nervous.
I'm more worried now than I was in 2008, where a difficult problem could be fixed because you could see what you needed to do. Here, there is so much uncertainty that it is going to be very, very damaging for the country.
The government is rudderless. The Prime Minister is stepping down. Even the leader of the opposition could be toppled. And from pro-EU Scotland came the threat of a constitutional crisis. Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon said her parliament could vote to block the Brexit, to the fury of the English.
You know, it's perhaps similar to the fury of many people in Scotland right now as we face the prospect of being taken out of the European Union against our will.
Anxiety is rising, even among people who voted for Brexit. This fishmonger in Sheffield told the BBC that he'd voted to leave without thinking it was actually going to happen.
I went to bed Thursday night thinking I'm going to get up and still be in Europe Friday morning. I was shocked, stunned, and then scared.
Those fears may be allayed if Britain strikes a deal with its European partners to carry on trading much as before. But some members of the EU want Britain to be shut out and severely punished. That, says former Governor of the Bank of England, Mervyn King, might harm the EU more than Britain.
What this will do, I think, more than anything else, is to create further serious doubt about whether the euro area is a likely successful long-term project.
The British Prime Minister meets the other 27 EU leaders in Brussels tomorrow. That summit should give us the first real indication of what lies ahead. The chances of an early resolution? Slim. Interminable crises are a European speciality. In London, I'm Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
So, uncertainty. Let's say you run a company based in London, a company that depends on unfettered access to the European market for its very business model. Now what do you do? Justin Fitzpatrick co-founded and is the COO of one of those companies. It's an American financial tech startup in London called DoDill. It helps investors and businesses do their due diligence. Justin, welcome to the program.
Nice to speak with you.
Were you as caught unawares as apparently the rest of the planet was Friday morning?
You know, there were a few signs that things were kind of going perhaps in a way that we weren't expecting. But, you know, I think it's safe to say that there were a lot of surprised people on Friday morning, myself included.
So now what happens to you? You're an American living and working in London. You have a startup that deals across Europe. What are you going to do?
Yeah, I mean, as a lot of people are saying, you know, the immediate forecast is kind of business as usual. Obviously, the events on Thursday and Friday inject a whole lot of uncertainty and volatility into, you know, into the political and economic picture right now. But we're a business that has very strong fundamentals, and you know, what we provide to our customers really is perfectly positioned to help them in times like this.
Okay, so I understand that as the public positioning of your company, but you can't tell me you're not worried that whenever this train gets started down the road, right, whenever the Article 50 thing gets triggered and whenever things start moving, you're not going to have to consider your options. What are some of those options?
You're absolutely right. I mean, when you look at what makes London a great place for financial technology startups like us, you know, it really comes down to access to talent, access to a large market, and a well-coordinated regulatory regime. So we're going to be doing what everybody else is doing and kind of continuing with our business here, but also thinking very carefully about how we make ourselves a much more international business. And that will include looking at options such as setting up a branch office in a jurisdiction where we know we'll be able to maintain access to the EU market.
So you could plan a weekend office space hunting trip to Hamburg, say?
Or Dublin or Berlin or Paris or any of the other places that, you know, we'll be looking to attract the next generation of technology entrepreneurs.
Right. Let me back you up for a minute and ask you about you thinking it's still business as usual. How can that how can that be true when arguably, you know, the biggest trading partner that the United States has and one of the key economic influences in the world is shambles is too strong, but it's in some trouble.
Yeah, look, again, I would kind of say that there are certain things that are within your control and things that aren't. So it's not going to be an easy road by any means, but, you know, the world must go on. And as the British like to say, you know, keep calm and carry on.
Yeah. How's that working so far, man, right?
Well, I think this is it's definitely being put to the test right now. So,
Justin Fitzpatrick, we got him in London. He is the COO and co-founder of a company over there, an American startup called DoDill. Justin, thanks very much.
Thanks very much. Take care.
Coming up.
In the short term, I think people will do what they often do when things are uncertain, which is just put it all on pause.
Brexit, uncertainty, and tech. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrials off 260 points, 1.5%, finished at 17,140. I take no joy in the Wawas today, by the way. The NASDAQ off 113 points, 2.4%, 4594. The S&P 500 dropped 36 points, 1.8%, 2,000 even on that index. Their banks, analysts/forecasts for Barclays, Royal Bank of Scotland, and Lloyd's Banking. Trading in Barclays and RBS was suspended. Barclays down 17% today, 32% since the vote. RBS off 15%, Lloyd's down 10%. Our banks, Bank of America had the worst day, down 6%. Citigroup off 4.5%. Morgan Stanley down 3.7%. If you happen to be in the market for some gold, remember what Tracy Samuelson was telling us about? Anyway, if you're looking for gold, how about mines? Barrick Gold is the world's biggest gold digger, mining in Tanzania, Australia, Argentina, and here in the U.S. Barrick up 3% today. Gold Fields with mines in South Africa, Ghana, Australia, and Peru up 1.8% today. Bond prices rose. The yield on the 10-year Treasury, listen to this, fell to 1.45%. The 10-year was at 1.74 when the polls closed. You're listening to Marketplace.
This Marketplace podcast is supported by Gusto. Let your employees know you've got their back by signing up for Gusto for payroll and HR. More than 300,000 small business owners use Gusto. They offer benefits like health insurance, employee onboarding, and more. Get your payroll taxes filed, deductions calculated, and your team paid fast. No more pain. Just the joy of running your business. Get 3 months free when you go to gusto.com/marketplace. That's gusto.com/marketplace.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdahl. Here's the thing about all the Brexit uncertainty. There was actually one thing that was certain, that the Brits would be voting on it. And that led companies with smart lawyers and gave them all they needed to know to write what you might call Brexit, or more properly, exit clauses into any deals they were working on. Marketplace's Sally Herships has more now on contracts that are meant to handle some of the big what-ifs.
When it comes to the world of corporate contract law, Brexit isn't actually that unusual.
In many contracts, you simply say if there is a massive shift of circumstances, you know, an earthquake or volcano that swallows up a company.
Or a referendum to leave the European Union. Andrew Hood is a lawyer with the international law firm Deckert. He's also formerly the legal advisor to Prime Minister David Cameron. He says contracts often include two kinds of clauses, something called force majeure and another called a frustration clause. Hood says they're different but can have the same effect, a contract that doesn't have to be pursued.
Either because it can't be, because physical circumstances have changed that make it impossible, or because it suddenly becomes illegal.
Imagine you're considering a deal promising you'll distribute widgets or teddy bears from London to any country in the EU within 24 hours. You knew the referendum vote was coming and you were worried, so you had your lawyer write a Brexit clause into your contract.
Which basically means that one or the or other of the parties can walk away from the deal and it proceeds no further.
That's Guy Laufer, a partner at Pinsent Masons, another international law firm. He says that doesn't mean deals won't happen, but there are a lot of companies that are reviewing their options right now. Charles Banks is a partner at Simmons & Simmons.
A lot of deals have simply paused.
While no one can say how many deals have invoked clauses, Andrew Hood says sensible companies should have been prepared. In New York, I'm Sally Herships for Marketplace.
The concerns being raised in the wake of the vote in the UK Thursday night are many, as we know. The country's political future for one, American bank jobs over there for another, and everything in between. Also, what about Stilton cheese? Marketplace's Rima Cray says that one.
Even though the cheese store of Beverly Hills isn't hard to spot, you could find the place with a blindfold on. But after 40 years, owner Norbert Wabnig doesn't notice the smell. The store carries nearly 600 different cheeses from around the world.
Spain, Germany, Austria, the Netherlands, Australia, New Zealand, Canada.
England. Tucked away in the back, there's a whole selection from the UK, including Stilton.
It's a little bit like cheddar that somebody put blue into.
Stilton is among dozens of English products protected by the EU based on their region of origin. With Brexit, competitors could potentially imitate foods like Melton Mowbray pork pies and sell them for less.
It really leaves the future of the UK protected food names in doubt.
Matthew O'Callaghan is with the UK Protected Food Names Association.
Protected food names are about food heritage. They're also about jobs in rural areas. They're also about not fooling the consumer.
It should be noted that Stilton is safe. It has a certified trademark. As for other products like Scotch whiskey, Steve Livens of the British Beer and Pub Association says he's confident they'll remain protected.
You know, certainly there is a sense from the Leave campaign that, you know, we need to be able to continue to trade and deal with Europe. It's just that we have no great sense of what that looks like.
The Protected Food Names Association says it will lobby hard to hold on to its members' special status. But it could be months, even years, before we know the fate of Cornish sardines or Cumberland sausage. I'm Rima Grace for Marketplace.
Their burritos don't quite have the creamy goodness of a nice Stilton, but Chipotle's trying real hard to get itself back on track. Yes, Chipotle of the food poisoning outbreak. The company starts a new customer loyalty program on July the 1st, as in Friday. Both revenues and sales have cratered since the scandal, but Chipotle's betting on those customer rewards. Gigi Duban has that story.
It's called a Chiptopia card. Doesn't exactly roll off the tongue, but Chipotle is hoping this new loyalty rewards program gets more customers rolling into its stores. In general, these programs are very effective, says Kelly Weichel. She's director of consumer insights at Technomic.
We keep seeing new brands entering the space and other brands continually updating what they're offering to keep pace and improve the value proposition for customers.
Weichel says at least 40% of consumers expect restaurants to have some sort of loyalty program. So the best ones break through the noise.
I think that differentiation is really important as these become more and more common.
Lars Perner teaches marketing at USC's Marshall School of Business. He says Chipotle should be careful not to seem like it's trying too hard.
Say a free meal every third time or something like that, that comes across as too much.
Chipotle is requiring 4 visits a month to get a free meal. More often, and you get bigger rewards. Perner says research shows people can see through overly generous rewards and they feel manipulated. Wagner Dos Santos, VP of Strategy and Insights at the Orlando marketing firm Big Eye, says it takes a lot of work to regain trust. And for Chipotle, he says, a loyalty rewards program
may be a little premature.
He says the company should work on rebuilding loyalty before it expects loyalty in return. I'm Gigi Duban for Marketplace.
The relationship between the U.S. technology industry and European regulators has been rocky at best. See also Microsoft in the late 90s and early aughts, and Google right now, for that matter. The United Kingdom has often been a moderating influence on the European regulation discussion. So I got our senior tech correspondent, Molly Wood, on the phone to see what a Brexit might mean tech-wise. Hey, Molly.
Hey, Kai. How are you?
Yeah, I'm well. It is no secret that tech tensions have been high between a lot of European countries. And the States, what happens here now? Because the UK had been a little bit of a moderating influence, right?
Yeah, the UK is very tech friendly. And there is sort of a question of what will happen now that the EU is free to pursue all of the antitrust and privacy and data sharing, all of the things it's been after. Most experts agree that in the short term, it's not like the EU is going to all of a sudden enact stricter regulations. They will, for one thing, have bigger fish to fry. And if the economy continues to struggle, like many have predicted that it will, if there's an actual Brexit, the last thing that the EU is going to do is sort of continue to alienate or annoy big tech companies.
Let me put it to you a different way then, right? Because remember, Germany and France were the home of things like the right to be forgotten.
Yep.
Right? And that was at least partly pushed back against by the presence of the UK in the EU, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. So then the other side of that coin is, so you could argue that they will have bigger fish to fry. There's no way they're going to enact even more stringent privacy and data regulations. Or they might, because one of the things that EU has been trying to do with some of these regulations is buy time for European companies to get up to speed. Oh. You know, they're only now in Europe enacting a single digital standard. They're unifying copyright law across all of the different nations so that you can do business without having to license content individually per country.
Oh, yeah.
So they've been stalling. They've been stalling so European startups can get up to speed. And it's true that they may continue that campaign, make it even stronger.
Let's look at the flip side of this thing. What kind of tech market could the UK become, assuming the whole Brexit thing actually does happen?
Yeah, to me, this is the really interesting part, because London has become a legitimate tech hub. You know, Wales has this crazy super broadband infrastructure build out.
Wales? You mean as
Wales.
In Prince of?
Wales.
Wow.
Turns out, super fast broadband infrastructure set to be completed any day now. And so it's possible that the UK, you know, down the road when things have calmed down a little, when they're in a position to do a lot of investment, offer a lot of tax incentives, they could say to the tech industry, hey, we're where you want to be. We have had friendlier regulation. That gets a little tricky because, of course, they have to have regulation that will be EU friendly also. But they are in a position to really reach out to the tech industry, the biotech industry in particular. They've done a good job of that already. And you could really see the UK position itself as a big time tech hub.
I will now ask you the question that I'm going to ask everybody I talk to about Brexit and the global economy from now on. And it goes like this. Uncertainty is basically the new normal, right? We have uncertainty. Get over it. How will that affect, do you think, the tech industry in this country as it relates to the EU and the UK?
Yeah, you know, in the short term, I think people will do what they often do when things are uncertain, which is just put it all on pause.
Mm-hmm.
There are a couple issues that are huge, and one of them is data, and it's super nerdy to get into. But anybody who was planning to build a big data center in the UK is probably going to hold off for now, because it's unclear how that data is going to be able to be shared and used across borders. Anybody who was planning on making a massive investment may just wait a second. Now, there's a good argument to be made, though, that when there's blood in the streets, you should buy property. And maybe pause is not the right thing to do.
Lovely. Molly Wood, our senior tech correspondent. Thanks, Molly.
My pleasure.
This final note on the way out today, which falls squarely into the, yeah, I get it, but a tad too soon, maybe. British Airways sent out an enthusiastic tweet today. Your dollar has never gone further, it read, and with our amazing 3-day sale, you can see even more of London. So, I mean, I get that business is business, but, you know, still. By way of context, the pound was at $1.50 when the polls closed Thursday night, $1.50. $1.32 during trading today. All right, Brexit day two ended like this. The Dow off 260, about 1.5%. The NASDAQ down 113, 2.4%. The S&P 500 dropped 36 points, 1.8%. Do not, whatever you do, look at your 401k today, all right? Our daily production team includes Bridget Bonner, Robert Garova, Jenny Josephson, and Daisy Palacios. I'm Kai Rizdahl. See you tomorrow, everybody. This is APM.
All over the country,
we need to improve reading in Wisconsin.
Schools are changing the way they teach reading.
I'm calling for a renewed focus on literacy.
We have gotten this wrong in New York and all across the nation.
And it's happening because of a podcast.
I think your podcast has changed my life.
And I'm going to share this podcast with everyone I meet.
Sold a Story investigates how teaching kids to read went wrong. New episodes of Sold a Story are available now.